Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Bookshelf Odyssey. My name is Art, and today we're continuing our deep dive into Dickens, and we're looking at his excellent novel, Great Expectations. This will be part two, where we look at chapters 5 through 7. And I want to say just thank you for everyone who's reached out and has started to make comments. We've had a small group join our Voxer chat, as well as a couple join on the Discord channel, but I think most of them now have gone over to Voxer. That seems to be where we're congregating right now, but I'm open to, if you want to be on Discord, Voxer, there's a couple of links below that will help you get there. And let me know if you want to be added to any of those or you're having trouble with that, and I'll get you added. Also, as always, just leave comments below on this video in the YouTube comments, and we'll keep our conversation going there as well. If you look at the last video, we had some great comments below that I'll be bringing up here in a few minutes. In the last video, I talked a little bit about why Mrs. Joe Gargery wasn't ever given a name. And several of you responded to that. And I thought I received some pretty good feedback on that. One was from Charmaine. And she said that, "I think that Dickens didn't give her a name because he didn't want to give her importance nor dignity. She is an abusive and miserable woman who takes out her frustrations on her husband and brother. Maybe, as you said in your video, maybe her father was abusive, so she grew up in this environment and doesn't know otherwise. Or she had dreams to marry well and live a comfortable life, but that dream was taken away when she had to take care of her brother, Pip. My impression is she was forced to settle with Joe. I feel sorry for Joe. He seems a good man, even though weak. I feel the same for Pip. Not the ideal environment to grow up. Practically, he doesn't have anyone to protect him. This is my first time reading Great Expectations, and so far, I am liking it." So, Charmaine, wonderful. That's great to hear. But thank you for that insight. And Lisa commented that she thinks of Anthony Hopkins when she thinks of the convict, and that's the miniseries, I think it was, or maybe a movie. But I remember hearing that's the commercial I heard that first piqued my interest in Great Expectations. I know Anthony Hopkins was in it, I'm pretty sure. And she says, and she said that that is my favorite adaptation. He is always a very bad, bad guy. And what a bleak scene for an opening of a book. Does this foreshadow only death and sorrow for Pip? And then we have Mrs. Joe. And she agrees that the women in the story are awful and such a contrast to David Copperfield, where the women are very idealized. So that's an interesting contrast there. If you're familiar with the story of David Copperfield, Lisa mentions, the women in that novel are very idealized. Most of the women in this novel are pretty rotten. So we'll see how that plays out and see if that holds true to all the women characters that we'll come across. And then Lisa brings up a very interesting point. She says, "I was wondering how the death of her siblings affected her. Was she the oldest sibling and was needed to care for each child and then watch them die? Did she get more and more bitter with each death and then more bitter when she did not have her own children? Bitterness eats away at the women in this book and causes so much pain to those around them." And she says that Joe's friendship and empathy is so heartwarming. And that is so true. Okay, and then I'm just bringing up some comments from the YouTube channel. Claudia from Turning Pages with Claudia. She said that Mrs. Joe is a deplorable person and the way she treats Pip and Joe is unforgivable. I also found the fact that she seems to have a lot of power and control over the household surprising. This is the 19th century, and I'm used to reading books about women in a higher station in life seeking the perfect marriage. It seems like she blames her apron wearing on Joe and Pip and believes that was out of her control. And that is why she has such ironclad control, or tries to have ironclad control of everything else, like the way she cuts the bread and spreads the butter for Pip and Joe. Mrs. Joe thinks she deserves better, and we can see the dissatisfaction that she has with her life mirrored in Pip. He feels as trapped as she does. That's That's a key thought, Claudia. You really had a great thought there. So let's hold on to that thought and see how that plays out in these coming chapters. So then a couple of people mentioned this is their first time reading. Again, Charmaine is reading it for the first time, and a user named Life's Banquet is reading it for the first time. So that's great. We'll try real hard to keep things spoiler-free for you in the videos coming out, but I think you're going to enjoy it. Carol commented, she said, I think that Joe and Pip are very sensitive men. Mrs. Joe is definitely nasty, but we do not know how she came to be married. How did she deal with her parents' death? And she was saddled with raising her brother as well. I don't think women had their own identical, I don't think women had their own identity and were expected to assume their spouses. That was a period of hard times. I don't know if the pun was intended there. her behavior should not be excused, but we may have a woman dealing with a lot of dashed hopes that any young girl would have. And that she and Joe have no other children. That's curious. So really great thoughts from you folks. And I am so glad you commented, because that helps me think deeper about Great Expectations. And several of these are in ways I hadn't thought of before. But yeah, you know, thinking about Mrs. Joe, and I've been thinking about her a lot, actually. Maybe we give her a little bit of a bad rap. Well, I mean, there's some aspects of her behavior that, you know, we would say are inexcusable. She certainly won't be the only misbehaving character in this novel. But, you know, maybe she had hopes of being married and having that perfect family. And then suddenly she marries Joe. She gets saddled with this child that's not hers after watching her five brothers, her mother and father die from who knows what. Her mother could have died in childbirth to Pip. You know, I don't know, but that's going to weigh on you. I mean, that could change your behavior for sure. And so maybe she's just been suffering and has had nothing to help her through that. So really great thoughts on Mrs. Joe. And I'm thinking about that. So let's keep those things in mind as we get into our chapters today. Oh, and also the idea of bringing up by hand. I think it was Carol pointed out that in her edition, there was a footnote that said that meant like spoon feeding or bottle feeding, that you have brought someone up. You know, you're feeding them by spoon, and so you're bringing them up by hand. They're not a natural child, a natural born child, but you're in that sense she's adopted him, and that's really interesting. So I wonder what Dickens was doing there. I think he was using a play on words when he said that Joe and Pip were brought up by hand. That, I mean, she's practically spoon feeding them, sure, but also by hand, you know, the way she smacks them around sometimes. I thought that was an interesting insight into that. So thank you for sharing that, Carol. So chapter 5 is part 3 of the serial. So the soldiers come in, and there's this moment of curiosity as to what are they here for. And the sergeant says, holds up some handcuffs, and he says, "We have had an accident with these, and I find the lock of one of them goes wrong and the coupling don't act pretty. As they are wanted for immediate service, will you throw your eye over them?" And so this is the reason for their arrival. They came to the blacksmith because their handcuffs are not working, and they're going to need to use them to catch a crook. And so while they are waiting for Joe to fix the handcuffs, Mr. Wopsle is chatting with the sergeant, and, you know, he says, you know, "Convicts, sergeant?" Mr. Wopsle asked Mr. Wopsle in a matter of course way. You know, just, we're just chewing the fat, we're talking shop, and the sergeant agrees, and he asks them, "Have you seen any such game?" And of course, everybody. So Pip narrates, "Everybody, myself excepted, said no with confidence. Nobody thought of me." "Well," said the sergeant, "they'll find themselves trapped in a circle, I expect, sooner than they count on. Now, blacksmith, if you're ready, His Majesty the King is." So after So after Joe gets the handcuffs fixed, it says that he mustered courage to propose that some of us should go down with the soldiers and see what came of the hunt. Now, this reminds me of what the convict said back on page 19 of my book, but that, you know, that Pip would be a loathsome creature to be out hunting somebody like him. So Mr. Pumblechook and Mr. Hubble declined. Again, that's the uncle and the wheelwright, on the plea of a pipe and ladies' society. But Mr. Wopsle, who's the church clerk, said he would go if Joe would. Joe said he was agreeable and would take me if Mrs. Joe approved. We never should have got leave to go, I am sure, but for Mrs. Joe's curiosity to know all about it and how it ended. As it was, she merely stipulated, "If you bring the boy back with his head blown to bits by a musket, don't look to me to put it together again." So always the bright light there is Mrs. Joe. A little the paragraph underneath that, it says, "When we were all out in the raw air and were steadily moving towards our business, I treasonably whispered to Joe, 'I hope, Joe, we shan't find them.' And Joe whispered to me, 'I'd give a shilling if they had cut and run, Pip.'" And I just kind of like that exchange, that, you know, I don't know what's motivating that comment there. Well, for Pip, you know, I think Pip is feeling guilty that, hey, if we catch these criminals, he's going to rat me out. Everyone's going to know I lied. So Pip is maybe looking out for himself a little bit. And I can't say I blame him for that, right? But Joe, I think just shows what a good guy Joe is that, you know, he hopes, I just hope they escape. Joe would just rather have it be done with, that they would be gone, that everyone is gone, everyone's safe. I just thought that was an interesting exchange. Oh, and so here's the quote I was looking for, farther down on page 33 of my edition. It says that when he's thinking about his convict, he said he had asked me if I was a deceiving imp, and he had said I should be a fierce young hound if I joined the hunt against him. Would he believe that I was both imp and hound in treacherous earnest and had betrayed him? You know, that's Pip's fear, is of that fear of discovery, that if this convict is found, that Pip will be revealed to be that, to be a betrayer, to be a involved in treachery, that he turned him in. As they're out in the marshes hunting convicts, sure enough, they find the two prisoners that had escaped, but they're fighting desperately like wild animals in the middle of the marsh. And they are, so the soldiers come rushing in and break them up. It's all terribly exciting, you know. And this exchange is another really interesting exchange between Pip's convict and the soldiers. "Mind," said my convict, wiping blood from his face with his ragged sleeves and shaking torn hair from his fingers. "I took 'em. I give 'em to you. Mind that." "It's not much to be particular about," said the sergeant. "It'll do you small good, my man, being in the same plight yourself. Handcuffs there." "I don't expect it to do me any good. I don't want it to do me more good than it does now," said my convict with a greedy laugh. "I took him. He knows it. That's enough for me." And so this young man he's been fighting with is trying to say, you know, this man, he tried to murder me, and Pip's convict is wanting the credit for having apprehended this other young man. Dickens is laying down some foundation that perhaps could come later in the story, that there is something going on between these two. You know, whether I love the depth that this adds to the story, that what's the history between them? You're just compelled to read more and you want to know more. Why, when the convict, he says he could have escaped, Pip's convict could have escaped, but he chose to stay back to make sure that this other guy got caught. That's so interesting. And why he does that, and what's the reason why he does that, you know, these are things to be explored later in the novel. So as Pip's convict and the other young man convict are being escorted back to prison, they're brought into this holding area and they're warming up by the fire. And the convict saw Pip once, and Pip was trying to let him know, you know, it wasn't me, but he's trying to do it secretly. I think what we have here is we get a moment of compassion. And so this is where Carol over on Discord said that there must be some code of honor amongst thieves that Pip was vindicated. I was surprised. Yeah, definitely. Something in the convict makes it so that he doesn't tell, turn in Pip. Let's look at what he says here. So he saw Pip. He didn't look at him again after that. He didn't mention him. He didn't talk about him. But then he says this: I wish to say something respecting this escape. It may prevent some persons laying under suspicion no longer me. You can say what you like, returned the sergeant, standing coolly, looking at him with his arms folded. But you have no call to say it here. You will have opportunity enough to say about it and hear about it before it's done with, you know. I know, but this is another pint, a separate matter. A man can't starve, at least I can't. I took some wittles up at the village over yonder, where the church stands the most out on the marshes. You mean stole, said the sergeant. And I'll tell you from where. From the blacksmith's. Hello, said the sergeant, staring at Joe. Hello, Pip, said Joe, staring at me. It was some broken wittles, that's what it was, and a dram of liquor and a pie. Have you happened to miss such an article as a pie, blacksmith? Asked the sergeant confidentially. My wife did, at the very moment when you came in. Don't you know, Pip? So, said my convict, turning his eyes on Joe in a moody manner, and without the least glance at me. So you're the blacksmith, are you? Then I'm sorry to say, I've eat your pie. Now, watch, I like how Joe answers this. So, Joe doesn't know that the convict is taking credit for Pip's thievery, of course. Joe has never met this guy before. Doesn't know why he's arrested. Doesn't know anything about him. But look at his compassion. He says, God knows you're welcome to it, so far as it was ever mine, returned Joe, with a saving remembrance of Mrs. Joe. We don't know what you have done, but we wouldn't have you starved to death for it. Poor, miserable fellow creature. Would us, Pip? The something that I had noticed before clicked in the man's throat again, and he turned his back. So then in the end of this chapter, the convicts are taken back to the Hulks and are re-imprisoned. And that ends part three of Great Expectations. And it was published on December 15th in 1860. But I find Joe's response to this to be one of compassion, one of empathy, maybe. You know, he realizes, really, this pie wasn't mine anyway. maybe a bit of a dig at Mrs. Joe there, but he says, we wouldn't have you starve to death for it. He says, we don't know what you've done, but you shouldn't have starved to death for it. Poor, miserable fellow creature. That one sentence says so much about the character of Joe. Doesn't it? It's he sees this prisoner as a fellow creature, again, with that theme of maybe seeing Joe and Pip as a kind of prisoner. But I think Joe's looking at him as a fellow human being, that you're a human, I'm a human, I'm going to treat you humanely and with dignity. He says, whatever you've done, the punishment shouldn't be starving to death for it. I could probably sit here and think of really terrible crimes that might deserve the death penalty. You know, I don't know. But Joe thinks, you know what? It's fine. It's fine. He's not bothered, and he shows his compassion. Chapter 6 is a very short one, and this is what begins part 4 of chapter 6 and 7. And really, the thing here I want, it kind of serves as a bridge to fast forward the story ahead by about a year. As you look in chapter 6 in that second paragraph about the middle, he says that he did not want Joe to find out what happened because he was afraid of losing Joe's confidence. He says, the fear of losing Joe's confidence and of thenceforth sitting in the chimney corner at night staring drearily at my forever lost companion and friend tied up my tongue. I morbidly represented to myself that if Joe knew it, I never afterwards could see him at the fireside feeling his fair whisker without thinking that he was meditating on it. That if Joe knew it, I never afterwards could see him glance, however casually, at yesterday's meat or pudding when it came on today's table, without thinking that he was debating whether I had been in the pantry. And then the chapter ends as it continues to talk about, brings forward some of the story and what happened when they got back and how tired he was. He says of it then that my state of mind, as I have described it, began before I was up in the morning and lasted long after the subject had died out and had ceased to be mentioned, saving on exceptional occasions. So the things that happened to him really weighed on his mind. So then we get to chapter 7. The story takes us about a year into the future and what's happening then. As Pip continues to struggle with these feelings of guilt and dismay and fear of losing Joe's confidence, find out that Pip is going to be apprenticed to Joe. He says, when I was old enough, I was to be apprenticed to Joe, and until I could assume that dignity, I was not to be what Mrs. Joe called pompied, or as I render it, pampered. So in other words, this isn't going to be a fun goof off time. I want you to work and to work hard to learn your craft. We're going to be introduced to a couple of characters. One is Biddy, who was says that Biddy was Mr. Wopsle's great aunt's granddaughter. You follow the line there? So Biddy is Mr. Wopsle's great aunt's granddaughter. I confess myself quite unequal to the working out of the problem, what relation she was to Mr. Wopsle. She was an orphan like myself, like me too, had been brought up by hand. So here's that phrase again, that she was brought up by hand. So again, this idea, she's an orphan. So from a young age, she's being hand fed. Again, I wonder if there isn't some, I don't know if she was also being beaten or neglected or not. But definitely we get an idea that Biddy and Pip are very similar kinds of people. Biddy helps Pip struggle to learn how to read and how to write. And we get this really charming moment where Pip and Joe are by the fire. It's about a year later. He's got his slate and he's trying to practice writing. And I just think this part is really sweet. And my book has it, all misspelled and everything, the letter that he writes. It just reminds me of getting little notes when my kids were little, where they would write to me and tell me things. But it says, my dear Joe, I hope you are quite well. I hope I shall soon be able for to teach you, Joe, and then we surely be so glad. And when I'm pregnanted, I think prenticed to you, Joe, what larks. And believe me, something infinitely, affectionately, maybe, Pip. I feel like I'm translating some ancient sculpture or writings there. But this kind of warmed my daddy heart a little bit. Just him writing such a sweet letter to, for those of you who have children, you get it, right? You get it. And so Joe sees it and he's impressed. He's like, wow, look what you wrote. And unfortunately, we find out that the only word that Joe really knows how to read is his own name. And it's just heartbreaking. To me, reading is so important. It's a massive part of who I am, and to not have that ability would be devastating. And Pip wonders why he never learned, why he didn't go to school. And so I'm going to read some of the sections. Some of it will be bigger sections, but I want us to really get a good idea of who Joe is. So he didn't go to school, he says. Here's why. He says, I'll tell you. My father, Pip, he were given to drink, and when he were overtook with drink, he hammered away at my mother most unmerciful. It were almost the only hammering he did, indeed, excepting at myself, and he hammered at me with a wigger only to be equaled by the wigger with which he didn't hammer at his anvil. You're listening and understanding, Pip? Yes, Joe. Consequence, my mother and me, we ran away from my father several times. And then my mother, she'd go out to work and she'd say, Joe, she'd say, now, please God, you shall have some schooling, child. And she'd put me to school, but my father were that good in his heart that he couldn't abear to be without us. So we'd come with a most tremendous crowd and make such a row at the door of the houses where we was that they used to be obliged to have no more to do with us and to give us up to him. And then he took us home and hammered us, which, you see, Pip, said Joe, pausing in his meditative raking of the fire and looking at me, were a drawback on my learning. Certainly, poor Joe. Though, mind you, Pip, said Joe, with a judicial touch or two of the poker on the top bar, rendering unto all their due and maintaining equal justice betwixt man and man, my father were that good in his heart, don't you see? I didn't see, but I didn't say so. Joe said that his father didn't mind him going to work, so he went to work and he worked hard. In that time, I were able to keep him, and I kept him till he went off in a purpleleptic fit, which is apoplectic fit or a stroke. And it were my intentions to have put upon his tombstone that what's-her-namer the failings on his part. Remember, reader, he were that good in his heart. Joe recited this couplet with such manifest pride and careful perspicuity that I asked him if he had made it himself. I made it, said Joe, my own self. I made it in a moment. It was like striking out a horseshoe complete in a single blow. I was never so much surprised in all my life. Couldn't credit my own Ed. Tell you the truth, hardly believed it were my own Ed. As I was saying, Pip, it were my intentions to have it had it cut over him. But poetry costs money, cut it how you will. Small or large, and it were not done. Not to mention bearers, all the money that could be spared were wanted for my mother. She were in poor health and quite broke. She weren't long of following, poor soul, and her share of peace come round at last. So Joe is telling us again his history. His father was very abusive. He and his mother fled several times, but he came back for them and found them and took them back home. Joe only has words of kindness to say of his father, which I don't know. Joe's a better man than me. Just, you know, and I want to be careful, you know, how I say this, but sometimes abuse victims often make excuses for the people that abuse them. You know, I've heard of stories of that. I've seen that happen. And it's heartbreaking to see this when, you know, you're so frustrated for poor Joe and his mother that why can't they get out? Why can't they find help? Why can't, you know, his father get help for his anger? These things just didn't exist back then. And the woman was expected to stay in her husband's home. You know, that was her role. Her identity, as one of our listeners pointed out, her identity absorbed by the husband. So then, speaking of women here, he says, your sister is a fine figure of a woman. Okay, if you say so, Joe. But he says, whatever family opinions or whatever the world's opinions on that subject may be, Pip, your sister is, Joe tapped the top bar with the poker after every word following, a fine figure of a woman. I could think of nothing better to say than, I am glad you think so, Joe. So am I, returned Joe, catching me up. I am glad I think so, Pip. A little redness or a little matter of bone here or there, what does it signify to me? So he's going to tell the story a little bit of how they met or how they were married, because we were wondering about that, and I had even forgotten about this chapter. So here it says, when I got acquainted with your sister, it were the talk how she was bringing you up by hand. Very kind of her, too, all the folks said, and I said, along with all the folks. As to you, Joe pursued, with a countenance expressive of seeing something very nasty indeed, if you could have been aware how small and flabby and mean you were, dear me, you'd have formed the most contemptible opinions of yourself. Not exactly relishing this, I said, Never mind me, Joe. But I did mind you, Pip, he returned with tender simplicity. When I offered to your sister to keep company and to be asked in church at such times as she was willing and ready to come to the forge, I said to her, And bring the poor little child. God bless the poor little child, I said to your sister. There's room for him at the forge. I broke out crying and begging pardon and hugged Joe round the neck, who dropped the poker to hug me and to say, Ever the best of friends, ain't us, Pip? Don't cry, old chap. When this little interruption was over, Joe resumed, Well, you see, Pip, and here we are. That's about where it lights. Here we are. Now, when you take me in hand in my learning, Pip, and I tell you beforehand I am awfully dull, most awfully dull, Mrs. Joe mustn't see too much of what we're up to. It must be done, as I may say, on the sly. And why on the sly? I'll tell you why, Pip. And then he talks about how she's given to government, and he's like, what do you mean government? And he says, you know, government of you and me, of controlling us, of leading us, of, you know, being in charge of us, and how she ain't over partial to having scholars on the premises, and in particular would not be over partial to my being a scholar for fear as I might rise, like a sort of rebel, don't you see? So, yeah, and then he talks about how Pip's sister is a mastermind, and that he's not. He says, and I ain't a mastermind, Joe resumed when he had unfixed his look and got back to his whisker. And last of all, Pip, and this I want to say very serious to you, old chap, I see so much in my poor mother of a woman drudging and slaving and breaking her honest heart and never getting no peace in her mortal days that I'm dead afeard of going wrong in the way of not doing what's right by a woman, and I'd for rather of the two go wrong the t'other way and be a little ill-convenienced myself. I wish it was only me that got put out, Pip. Let's talk about Joe. Mrs. Joe was single when she had Pip. Maybe she had a husband that died. I don't know. But she was a single mother in Victorian times, saddled with this child. Any hopes of marriage she would have had are probably dashed. You know, I'm trying to imagine a gentleman or anyone. I don't know if they would have been of the gentleman class, but anyone who, it sounds like Joe had sympathy on Pip and offered himself to be married to Mrs. Joe so that there would be, you know, that Mrs. Joe would have help at home. I don't know, because he had compassion for Pip, that Pip would have a father figure. It almost sounds like nobody wanted to be with Mrs. Joe. So Joe offered his hand in marriage, which she accepted because she probably had nothing else. And assuming things were still the same as they were, you know, even just some years ago during the, like the Jane Austen time period where, you know, women needed to marry for money, that was an important detail. They wouldn't want to saddle themselves with a child that wasn't theirs. Likely, I don't know. I'm making some assumptions here. So if anyone's more familiar with this, let me know if I'm off base there. But, and he wishes things were better, but they are what they are. And he thinks admirably of Mrs. Joe for taking Pip in. Don't know if she had a choice or not, but he does. Anyway, and so he knows that Mrs. Joe would think that if there were scholars on the premises that he would rise up and rebel, and she likes to have that controlling aspect. I don't know. I'm feeling a little more sympathy for Mrs. Joe this week and a lot more respect for Mr. Joe, if that were possible. He's a good man. So Mrs. Joe comes home and Mr. Pumblechook is with them, and they're talking about Pip. Something's happened. So she says, It's only to be hoped, said my sister, that he won't be pompeyed, but I have my fears.
She ain't in that line, Mum, said Mr. Pumblechook. She knows better.
I looked at Joe, making the motion with my lips and eyebrows. She?
Joe looked at me, making the motion with his lips and eyebrows. She? My sister catching him in the act, he drew the back of his hand across his nose with his usual conciliatory air on such occasions and looked at her. Well, said my sister in her snappish way, what are you staring at? Is the house afire? Okay, this exchange, which some individual, Joe politely hinted, mentioned she. And she is a she, I suppose, said my sister, unless you call Miss Havisham a he. And I doubt if even you'll go so far as that. Miss Havisham uptown, said Joe. Is there any Miss Havisham downtown? Returned my sister. She wants this boy to go and play there, and of course he's going, and he had better play there, said my sister, shaking her head at me as an encouragement to be extremely light and sportive, or I'll work him. So Joe doesn't understand how someone like Mrs. Havisham, who we know nothing about other than her name, wants Joe to come and play. To play what? Why? What's going on? Well, we're not given those details yet. We get the sense that maybe Miss Havisham is wealthy, that this is something that Pip had better do and do well. He gets cleaned up. He gets brushed up, much to his distress. But I like what they said about what we can infer already from about Mrs. Havisham. When Mr. Pumblechook and his sister, you know, says that he's afraid she's going to pamper him. And Mr. Pumblechook says, she knows better. Yikes, we're not off to a good start. Here we get some prison language again at near the ending of this chapter. It says, when my ablutions were completed, I was put into clean linen of the stiffest character, like a young penitent into sackcloth, and was trussed up in my tightest and fearfulest suit. I was then delivered over to Mr. Pumblechook, who formally received me as if he were the sheriff, and who let off upon me the speech that I knew he had been dying to make all along. Boy, be forever grateful to all friends, but especially unto them which brought you up by hand. Goodbye, Joe. God bless you, Pip, old chap. I had never parted from him before, and what with my feelings and what with my soap suds, I could at first see no stars from the chaise cart, but they twinkled out one by one without throwing any light on the questions. Why on earth was I going to play at Miss Havisham's? And what on earth I was expected to play at? And that's the end of part four. And we have a nice little cliffhanger there, first published on December 22nd, 1860. So this is interesting. Mr. Pumblechook says to always be grateful by unto them which brought you up by hand. And look who he says goodbye to. Goodbye, Joe. That perhaps more than Mrs. Joe, Joe is the one that he is grateful to. I mean, in some ways, Joe makes some sacrifices too, that he marries a woman who very likely had no dowry, if people of their station even had dowries. I'm not sure. Already she has a child that's not his, but he sees the young Pip and he feels empathy for him. He feels compassion for him. So he offers himself to Mrs. Joe for marriage. For Pip's sake, they form a family. Such as it is. So a lot has happened here in these three chapters. Some questions here for us to discuss as we go out. I'd love to hear your thoughts and any new thoughts you had or anything else you want to bring up. But why do you think Pip's convict showed him some compassion? What was his motivation? Maybe he was returning the favor, where Pip showed him compassion, now the convict returns the favor. That's what I'm thinking, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. What do you think about the background we get of Joe and Mrs. Joe? Do you think that will help explain what's going on with her and her attitude? Do we have a little bit more of compassion for her, or is she going to continue to be awful? Well, I don't want to give anything away of what's coming, but if you think Mrs. Joe is awful, just wait. Okay. We get some hints here. So we're left wondering, why is Pip going to Mrs. Havisham's? Who is Mrs. Havisham? What's going to happen next? Well, we'll find out in next week's chapter. Our reading for next week is chapters 8-10, I believe. You can check the show notes to get the actual reading. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
And let me know if you want to be on an upcoming episode to talk about these chapters, and we will, I'll get something on the calendar and record with you. I'd love to have you on, or even a group of you on, or all of you on. Maybe we can do sometimes do just a joint Zoom call or something to talk about that. Just some ideas I want to throw out there. I did want to say that I'm also making the audio of this video available on my podcast feed. If listening just to the audio is easier for you. Anyway, it's getting late. I got to get to bed. So glad to have you guys here. So until next time, keep reading and take care.